Good morning. This is Chair Peter Fisher. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting of the Behavioral Health Policy Division to order. The clerk will take the roll for attendance.
Fisher.
Fisher present.
Frederick.
Present.
Frankie.
Frankie present.
Backer. Backer. Baker.
Baker is here.
Becker Finn.
Present.
Hansen. Hansen. Katiza Watoon. Katiza Watoon.
Present.
Lippert.
Lippert present.
Moeller.
Present.
Pearson.
Pearson present.
Thompson. Thompson. Backer. Mr. Chair, the quorum is present.
Okay, with quorum being present, we will start with the next item on the agenda. That is the review and approval of the division minutes for February 16th, 2022. The first issue is, are there any questions or corrections to the minutes? If not, the chair would entertain a motion for the approval of the minutes from February 16th, 2022.
I'll move approval.
Ritson Backer moves approval of the minutes from February 16th, 2022. Please unmute for a voice vote. All in favor of approving the minutes, saves aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Members, we have three bills on the agenda today. We're going to be starting off with the hearing on House File 3418. 3418 has an A1 amendment that was submitted but was not submitted in time for the deadline that we require for amendments. So we are going to hold the hearing on the bill, but we will not move the bill and the amendment till next week. So we'll take all testimony today, have all questions today, and then next week this would be the first item on the agenda that we would approve and modify with the amendment and then forward on to the next committee. So what we will do is we'll start off with Representative Bang. If you'd first of all like to tell us a little bit about the amendment that you have, and then we'll take any questions.
Mr. Chair, just like, no, I am here. I was tardy, so just to parole, Representative Backer is here.
Okay, thank you, Representative Backer. We will make sure we have that noted. So, Representative Bang, if you could tell us a little bit about the amendment that you have, we'll check to see if there's any questions on it. And if there aren't, then we will roll into the presentation and testimony of your bill. So, Representative Bang, if you'd like to tell us a little bit about the amendment, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I completely understand and respect the committee procedures. The amendment is, it's a pretty simple amendment. It's just a technical amendment, changing a few wordings there to make it more clear. And that's just the gist of my amendment.
Okay, very good. Are there any questions for Representative Bang about the amendment? Not seeing any hands. Representative Bang, why don't you go ahead and tell us about your bill, and then we can move on to your testifiers after you do your part of the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for hearing House File 3418. Like everywhere else, we continue to face a mental health workforce crisis. There simply aren't enough people to carry out the treatment and services to meet the increased needs. This bill builds upon the work that was passed last year. There are several main components. It allows people to provide more supervisory hours and still qualify for the loan forgiveness program. It also targets loan forgiveness program to applicants who provide culturally responsive services, provide services to underserved communities, including rural areas of the state. It creates a grant program for community providers that serve people from culturally diverse communities, underrepresented communities, or a large percentage of clients on Medicaid in order to support people who are working towards becoming a mental health professional. This eliminates a barrier to licensure, paying for supervision, and also makes more attractive to work for these types of providers. Funds can be used to pay for supervision, create a program to provide supervision to multiple interns or clinical trainees, and to pay for licensee application and exam fees. It also creates a scholarship program to support mental health practitioners and others already working in the field of mental health to become a mental health professional. Those already working in the field understand that the work, what the work is, and are more likely to complete the degree and become licensed. The grants will go to a provider who serves more Medicaid clients, and the funds could be used for tuition reimbursement or costs that could prevent someone from going back to school, such as transportation and child care issues. It also allows mental health practitioners to be a case manager. Mental health practitioners already have 2,000 hours worth of experience. There are very similar requirements, and this will greatly help community agencies that are providing case management services. It also appropriates additional funding for the loan forgiveness program, appropriates funding for the supervision grant program, appropriates funding for the mental health professional scholarship program, and appropriates funding to increase the training offered for people to become peer or family peer specialists, and appropriates state funding for what is called the CEMIG program. These dollars support more culturally diverse people to go to the field and to organizations to provide trauma-informed, culturally responsive mental health and substance use disorder services. And lastly, it creates a website that will serve as an informational clearinghouse for people wanting to become or who are mental health professionals. It will contain information about the different programs in the state, how to become licensed, who provides supervision, loan forgiveness programs, and so on. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will yield my time to my testifiers.
Okay, thank you, Representative Vang. We'll go to your first testifier, Ms. Sue Abderholden. If you could introduce yourself, who you're with, and start your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. And I want to thank Representative Vang for once again carrying a bill to address the mental health workforce crisis. We know that the mental health needs of Minnesotans are increasing, and we are finding it increasingly difficult to meet them. I did provide a handout to the committee, which outlines the efforts, since 2013 to address this crisis. While several of the recommendations from the 2015 report have been implemented, there are still some important issues remaining that should be addressed. The Department of Health has shared that about half of the people who graduate don't go on to become licensed. NAMI Minnesota decided to conduct a survey in December asking current mental health professionals and those on the path to become one what the barriers were to licensure. The most common answer was cost of the exam and licensure and paying for supervision. After paying for graduate school, mostly taking loans out, it was just too hard to pay for supervision as well and to find someone to provide the supervision. We also know that providers that have a large percentage of their clients on Medicaid offer lower salaries and have a harder time providing supervision for free, so recruitment can be an issue. If one of their clinicians are providing supervision, they are not able to bill for that time, which is a loss in revenue. We know that many of our culturally specific providers serve a high percentage of people on Medicaid and from their community. We do not have enough mental health providers from culturally specific communities. 88.3% of mental health clinicians are white. We need to do better. This bill, as summarized by Representative Vang, does provide some concrete steps to help people get across the finish line and become licensed by providing free supervision, and that can actually be completed in 2 years or less, and by creating a path for people already working in the field to become a mental health professional. We believe it's important to increase the numbers of people who are peer specialists or family peer specialists, and we think that creating a website that pulls together all the information about becoming a mental health professional will also help. And lastly, increasing funds for the very effective CMIG program, which is the Cultural and Ethnic Minority Infrastructure Provider Program, is critical to advancing our field. I urge your support for this and, frankly, all the other bills that are on the agenda today. It's so important that we continue to address our workforce crisis. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Abderholden. We will next move on to Mr. Ben, and I apologize if I don't get the pronunciation right on your last name, Fiegel. And if you'd like to introduce yourself and who you're with and start your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, representatives. My name is Benjamin Feigl. I'm the Director of Behavioral Health at CLUS. CLUS is Comunidades Latinas Unidas en Servicio, or Latino Communities United in Service. We provide behavioral health services and an array of supportive services to the Latino community. Our mission is to advance social and economic well-being for Latinos. In our behavioral health department, we've used the CMIG grant for three purposes. We're extremely grateful for this funding. One is to provide direct services for those unable to pay for services, and we provide direct mental health assessment and treatment and chemical health or substance use disorder assessment and treatment at CLUES. We also provide prevention through education initiatives with the goal of preventing substance use disorder, addiction, substance use disorders and addiction and gang affiliation. The third thing we use the funding for is for workforce development. And as the previous speakers have alluded to, we've had trouble with workforce. There is a shortage of bilingual bicultural providers. And so we're proud of that. In the last 8 years, we've been able to train 20 plus interns in the mental health and behavioral health field. And we've been able to retain some of our current staff for the last 6 or 7 years. And that's largely in part to the grant. We are able to pay for their supervision. We're able to pay for licensing fees. We're able to pay for the time for supervisors to provide the supervision. And we're able to pay for training in state-of-the-art behavioral health interventions. We at CLUES and those other providers in the CMIG community know that la cultura cura, culture cures. And so we need providers who are representative of the community, because we know when we're rooted in our cultural strengths, the healing can happen. One shortcoming or area of improvement for this grant is that it's not been able to, the funding level has not met the needs of the community. With the pandemic, we're seeing an increase of needs. It's been exacerbated by the pandemic, and our wait list for therapy services is up over 200 people waiting for therapy right now, and it's just unacceptable. So we need to train and retain our interns, and so I thank you for your consideration for increasing the funding for the CMIG project.
Thank you, Mr. Feigl. Next, we have Ms. Ellie Skelton. If you'd like to introduce yourself, who you're with, and start your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. My name is Ellie Skelton. I'm the executive director at Touchstone Mental Health. We provide innovative person-centered services that foster health, hope, and well-being, and we work with adults with mental illness, substance use disorder, and other behavioral health challenges. And we provide 10 programs throughout the Twin Cities Metro. We're a $17 million budget with about 240 staff, and we'll support around 2,000 people this year. Thank you, Representative Vang, for this very important bill and for the opportunity to testify today. Over the past 2 years, we have been challenged to provide services each and every day. We do have 6 sites that provide 24/7 care. We never shut down during the pandemic. The frontline staff at Touchstone and across our state have been amazing, but we are reaching our breaking point. We need new solutions, and that is why I'm supportive of all 3 bills today, at looking at ways to address the behavioral health needs of everyone in our community. House File 3418 offers a number of solutions to help increase pathways into behavioral health careers and remove barriers. In 1991, I started my career. I was a student at the University of Minnesota, and I was getting my degree in English Literature and Women's Studies. I was hired as a part-time worker as a residential treatment program at the time called a Rural 36 and Oasis program in Golden Valley, and it's still operating. Today, I wouldn't be able to have that opportunity because statutes have changed over time, and we've made it more difficult to offer a pathway into the behavioral health career. I wouldn't have known about the behavioral health world and career, and I would not have worked here for the last 30 years if I hadn't had this pathway into starting and understanding, you know, that this was an opportunity for me as a young student at the University of Minnesota. You get a lot of supervision on the job, and you learn a lot through on-the-job training. I believe this bill helps reduce some of those barriers and allows students like myself was at one time to enter this field and really get that opportunity to make an impact in the behavioral health world. We need to build pathways. The 2 areas of 3418 I want to highlight is this change becoming a targeted case manager. As I mentioned, you know, there are many people that could be great behavioral health staff, and we've just put a lot of barriers in the way, allowing practitioners to become a target case manager. And this position is open up across the state, and any program that offers target case management, they have an opening today. So we desperately need more case managers in the state of Minnesota. It's a key position to connecting individuals with resources. It doesn't diagnose or treat. It's connecting to resources, and a mental health practitioner is an excellent role to be able to provide that service. Change is constant constant in our world. And as a mental health practitioner, we walk along people in recovery as they experience personal change and move forward. As people's living, working, and support environments change, our support changes. The system also needs to respond to changes in the world around us. This bill helps the system adapt to our changing world. The other component of House File 3418 I want to highlight is, which Representative Vang did a great job, is just reducing the barriers to licensure. We have a shortage of mental health professionals, and I applaud this bill in creating a grant program that would fund the supervision of intern and clinical trainees. Community mental health programs were eager to provide this service, but we've struggled to find the resources to do so. And we often lose staff who then go elsewhere to find that supervision and leave a community mental health program. We serve about 95% people on Medicaid or prepaid medical assistance plan. So we have difficulty competing with hospitals and healthcare systems and retaining our staff. And if we could provide that supervision, not only could we add to the number of mental health professionals, reduce the time before their licensure, but we could also retain staff to improve services. So thank you for allowing me to testify, and appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Ms. Skelton. I will open it up for questions at this point in time. Are there any questions for the author or any of the testifiers? Representative Thompson, go ahead, please.
Yes, Chair. And I want to support this also. Let's be clear. I do want to support this. I always have a problem with the resources trickling down to the African American community. I always have a problem with that. We seem to put all of our the funds intended for the African American community into a pot called the BIPOC pot. And the B in BIPOC never gets the resources. It happens time and time again. Although this looks real sexy on paper, putting this work and implementing this work in our community where it's needed the most, because we're experiencing the most gun violence, we're experiencing carjackings. Our kids are not even interested in school, but we do need mental health providers in our community. That's the only problem I have. And I know that because I do a lot of data. And I'm noticing that the MNQALs are keeping a lot of the African-American providers and people who want to be behavioral health. These MNQALs, like, we don't need a bachelor's degree to fill potholes in the street. You know what I mean? So, but these minimum qualifications are meant to keep certain groups of people out of these positions who can help our community. And it all starts here in the human resource department of these different organizations, and I've looked at a lot of them. Some of these organizations, with all due respect, their executive board looks like Target Corp, which in turn trickles down to my community not getting the resources that they need. So I just wanted to put that on your plate, not coming down hard, because I do want to support this because our community really needs this help. But just something to just put on your menu, just to just take a look at.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Thompson. Representative Vang, do you have any comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Thompson, for your remarks. I'm not sure if it's necessarily true that this bill does not go down to African-American community, does not support that, but that's not what this bill is. If you have a suggestion on how we can be more targeted to serve the needs of African-American communities, please let me know. I'm open to making that a much more targeted language as well. What this bill does is it serves all our communities from urban to rural, from whatever zip code that you are in. And if you feel like we need more language to make a much more targeted response to directly support African-American communities, I'm open to that, and I'm open to your suggestion.
Representative Thompson, did you have something else? Okay, we'll move to Representative Becker Finn then.
These pots say...
Oh. I'm sorry, Representative Thompson, you're cutting in and out.
Can you hear me? See these pots of money, and we see we have representation that says Latino, American Indian, and then it says what among American, but then it says something like BIPOC, But the above that I've just mentioned can also dip into the BIPOC pot. Does that make sense? So you'll see this Hmong American, Asian American, American Indian, Latino. Some of you will see all these different, but then our names are going to this pot of BIPOC money. But the above mentioned can also go into the BIPOC pot of money also because they identify as BIPOC. But I do know that African Americans are a protected class. It seems like we always have a problem when we put African American in the mix, we have to go into this BIPOC. And I'm not trying to like cause any confusion or disturbance. I just want to make sure that we recognize that African American families do need these resources also. And I'm always Representative Vang has always been willing to help and to research and to try to help make this. And so I look forward to working with Representative Vang on this also.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Thompson. Next, we have Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Chair Fisher. And I just want to thank Representative Vang for bringing this bill forward. As you guys know, I'm always talking about how, you know, none of this matters, this other work of building buildings and creating programs if we don't have the people to actually provide the services. And so I think this is a really critical piece. It doesn't solve everything, but it's really important. And I think one thing I want to point out is that we've done in the past like loan forgiveness stuff, but the grants in here are really important because loan forgiveness programs still require you to have the means while you're waiting for your loans to be forgiven. And that can really be a barrier. And I don't want to see us, licensing people who aren't fully prepared to do the work well. You know, I think that's really important that we not sort of lower the bar just to throw licensure at people. But I think anything we can do to help people get there easier and without needing to be, you know, independently have access to wealth in order to be a license to do this work is really important. And just really appreciate the work on this, Representative Vang. And I think it's maybe one of the most critical pieces of solving our current crisis. So thank you for bringing this forward. Proud to be a co-author.
Thank you, Representative Becker Finn. Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Vang. Yes, this is a crucial bill and there's definitely a need. I do have a few questions. My first question is, I'm not seeing a Senate companion. Are you working with anybody in the Senate on this so that we can move it forward?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Bain, go ahead.
Thank you, Representative Frankie, for your question. Yes, I sent this the Senate companion to Senator Uckey, and I can follow up with him on what the status of that bill is.
Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Glad to hear that, Representative Vang. My next question is, the appropriations are blank. Do we have an idea on how much you're looking for here, or are we just hoping to get whatever we can at the end of the day?
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an open discussion. I'm currently working with stakeholders to get a much more defined number on that to make sure that we can definitely make a difference moving funding towards this bill.
Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Vang. I just have a couple of general questions about some terminology. In here, we mentioned infrastructure a lot, the infrastructure improvements in Greater Minnesota, cultural and ethnic minority infrastructure grants. What type of infrastructure are we talking about? Are we talking about websites? Or are we talking about buildings or repairs to buildings? Just wondering what the infrastructure money is going towards.
Representative Bain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Ms. Sue Aberholden will be best to answer this question.
Ms. Aberholden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Frankie. Infrastructure could be setting up actually a billing system. It could be, helping with records. It could be making sure that you have a way to provide the supervision. So it's not buildings. It really is kind of the internal workings, especially of small providers who, you know, don't have huge systems, don't have, you know, hundreds of, you know, thousands of dollars coming in, to make sure that they can meet the needs of their community.
Representative Franke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Abderholden. Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. I just was unsure because the wording in the two different areas was different. So that's all my questions, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Representative Franke. I'm not seeing any other questions at this point in time. Representative Bang, if you'd like to give a quick close, and then I'm reminding people that we will be that this bill will be dealt with next week is when we'll vote on it. Representative Bang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank the committee for your time at hearing this issue. This bill was created to benefit all communities, regardless of where they live and regardless of the color of their skin. And if I understand, Representative Thompson, if you feel we need a more targeted response to African-American communities, which, you know, I recognize there is a need, just like we have a need for every community out there going through a mental health crisis. And as a state overall, we are experiencing a mental health workforce crisis. I'm open to hearing your suggestions, and I look forward to your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bang. And as I mentioned, this bill will be dealt with at our meeting next week, where we will move the amendment and the bill and pass them out at that point in time. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Representative Bang, for your great bill. And we will now move on to the next item on our agenda. The next item we have before us is House File 3372, bill by Representative Moran. Representative Moran, I'll move that House File 3372 be referred to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. And I see you have an A1 amendment. I'll move the A1 amendment. Can you briefly explain your A1 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I don't have the amendment in front of me. Can you give me the language?
Sure. What it does is on line 7, before the word mental, it says a grant to mental health services, would insert an A, and delete providers to establish and insert provider that is. And then on line 10, before evidence base, insert practice and.
That is the bill. That okay. is the amendment.
Okay. And this is to get it in the shape that the, seeing this is the first stop, this is the opportunity for the author to get in the shape that they would like. Are there any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, this will be a voice vote on the, on the motion to adopt the A1 author's amendment, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? The motion prevails and the A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Moran, if you'd like to present, what we'll do is you'll present your bill, your testimony, we'll take your testifiers, and then we'll go to questions. So Representative Moran, if you'd like to go ahead and present your bill.
All right, well, good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I wanna thank you for this opportunity to introduce House File 3722. The last 2 years has been extremely hard with the pandemic, COVID-19, of course, the murder of George Floyd, the civic unrest, and quite frankly, the insurrection has made many African-Americans looking for therapy for themselves, for their children, and for family members. Minnesota struggles to catch up as minority mental health needs grow. Historically, many in the African-American community have been hesitant to seek mental health care because of stigma, discrimination from some providers, and the lack of culturally competent care. But as more people are seeking mental health care to help cope with grief and trauma, they're looking for therapists that they can trust. Mr. Chair and members, today you will hear from testifiers why House File 3722 is needed. I do have several testifiers today. I wanted to make my intro short so that they have an opportunity to testify. And so, Mr. Chair, if it's okay, I would like to start with Dr. Bravada.
Okay, very good. Dr. Bravada, if you'd like to introduce yourself and tell us who you're with and start your testimony, please.
Thank you so much. Good morning, Chair Fisher and members. And thank you so much, Representative Moran, for introducing this bill. My name is Dr. Bravada Garrett Akinsanya. I'm the Executive Director of the African American Child Wellness Institute, and I'm here to speak, of course, in support of HF 3372. I'm a licensed clinical psychologist with over 40 years of experience in the field of mental health, serving clients whose ages ranged from birth to death. I'm a fellow of the American Psychological Association and a board certified diplomat and fellow in African-centered Black psychology. I am a past president of both the Minnesota Psychological Association and the Minnesota Association of Black Psychologists. I have written, presented, and consulted extensively in the areas of developmental psychology, women's issues, trauma, community violence, multiculturalism, poverty, homelessness, severe psychopathology, and African-American mental health. The African-American Child Wellness Institute, ACWI, is a 501c3 nonprofit Rule 29 community mental health center located in North Minneapolis as well as in Plymouth, Minnesota. We provide mental health services across the state, reaching clients in places such as Rochester, Mankato, St. Cloud, Duluth, and the metro area, of course. ACWI's mission is to promote the psychological and spiritual liberation of children of African descent and their families by providing culturally specific mental health services and by developing access to culturally focused holistic wellness resources, research, and practices. Through the DHS CIMIC program that was mentioned earlier, ACWI has been able to provide clinical and ancillary services to connect to uninsured and underinsured children and their families, to provide culturally specific mental health providers and services. We provide capacity building for licensure services for African American clinicians to gain the training and clinical supervision in a culturally congruent, trauma-informed, practice-based, and evidence-based strategies. Through the CIMIC grant, we were also able to train more than 40 African-American clinicians to licensure. And due to inadequate funding of that CIMIC grant, we have not been able to offer or keep competitive salaries. Thus, we have lost almost all of our great trained interns to other agencies that could afford them. We provide community-based outreach and services to provide psychoeducation and behavioral health to children and families via public education programs and activities. And we continue to fight for the healing and the rights of our children and our communities to be well. You know, it is no secret that African-American children and families in Minnesota experience severe disparities in multiple systems, including education, foster care, criminal justice, and mental health. Sadly, a recent Minnesota student survey revealed that while 15% of Black ninth grade youth reported having long-term mental health, behavioral, and emotional problems, that had lasted them more than 6 months, or more, that only 9% of those children had ever been treated during the last year. These systemic practices have a deleterious impact on the lives of African-American youth and have a glaring impact on issues of safety, trauma, suicide, drug abuse, and exposure to violence. Our psychological research shows that health outcomes for Black patients are better when they are treated by Black providers. That research is critical given that African Americans in the United States generally experience poorer health outcomes across a variety of the disease and condition dimensions. If we invest in moving Black youth and families from a perspective of being at risk to being at promise, the trajectory of their lives can be positively changed. Your support of HF 3372 will expand access to culturally specific and comprehensive mental health services for adults and children, increase the number of licensed mental health providers of African descent in the workforce who can then render culturally proficient care to children and adults of African descent. That your support of this bill will support at-risk parents or at promise parents, whether they face circumstances including poverty, mental illnesses, substance abuse, or physical health challenges. And finally, the support of this bill will help us develop an innovative collaborative models for service delivery among people of African descent. With that, I close with gratitude for this hearing.
Thank you, Dr. Bravada Garrett Akasanya. Appreciate your testimony. Next, we'll go on to Ms. D'Amico Ralston, if you'd like to introduce yourself and who you're with.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I want to thank you for allowing us to introduce House File 3372 and also thank Representative Moran for authoring this bill. I'm D'Amico Ralston, a public health nurse clinician in Ramsey County, and have been working alongside Ramsey County residents with small children and community stakeholders for over 20 years. I am a community advisor on the U of M Programs and Health Disparities Research and the Integrated Care for High-Risk Pregnancy Advisory Boards and an executive member of the MDH Maternal Child Health Committee. I was trained as an LPCC or Licensed Professional Clinical Counselor through the African American Child Wellness Institute. And I am now also owner of Protective Factors Integrated, a mental health clinic specializing in working alongside African American families. I am here to discuss the critical need for mental health providers to serve the Black American community utilizing a culturally specific focus, such as what's provided at the African American Child Wellness Institute. The integration of practice-based evidence and evidence-based assessments and treatments were very much a part of my experiences at the African American Child Wellness Institute. I was prepared through evidence-based reflective practice, case consultations, and direct experiential learning as evidenced by my ability to pass the state licensure exam at first attempt and seeing positive outcomes with individuals and families utilizing the African-centered wellness model. Dr. Bravada fostered an environment for career development and healing through participating in internal and external group trainings, bringing in experts from the field, case consultation, supervision, and weekly trainings. While in my master's studies, I discovered just how much hands-on preparation I had received in comparison to other students assigned to other sites who had not been given experiential learning opportunities that are imperative for being ready not only to sit for licensure, but also practice. I take with me those experiences into my work as a nurse supervisor and a therapist. Your support of this bill will help remove barriers to clients accessing services, which I see in my community engagement with residents and in consultation with public health colleagues, and for students who may otherwise be unable to pay for supervision required for licensure. It also creates pathways for providers by speeding up the process for insurance paneling or credentialing, which is another challenge that mental health therapists face in applying to receive reimbursement for services, often leading to therapists providing cash-only pay options, which many community members cannot afford, increasing disparities in health outcomes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am available for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Ralston. Next on the testifier list, we have Mr. L. McFarland. Mr. McFarland, if you'd like to introduce yourself, tell us who you're with, and start your testimony, please.
Mr. Chair and members Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of House File 3372. My name is Al McFarland. I'm a Minnesota business owner residing in North Minneapolis. My company, McFarland Media Interest Incorporated, owns and publishes Insight News, the leading Black community newspaper in the state of Minnesota. I serve as editor of the publication. I also lead the Minnesota Multicultural Media Consortium, whose members mobilize to carry out the critical information and education mission to encourage our community's adoption of protocols, testing, and vaccines to combat the COVID-19 pandemic in Minnesota. I'm a member of the board of directors of the Greater Twin Cities United Way, and I'm proud to serve as board chair for African American Child Wellness Institute. You know, the COVID-19 pandemic has taught us the importance of reaching, serving, engaging Black residents in ways and places that allow our people to see ourselves not as just the problem, but rather as the solution. In that light, as a communications and marketing professional, I support African American Child Wellness Institute's work to change the narrative about mental health and wellness. The Institute is demonstrating the value of broadening awareness and access by delivering culturally competent mental health and wellness services. The Institute's work and methodology deliver healing to children, to individuals and families, while uniquely in their public-facing outreach, nurture a vocabulary that enables the creation of a public mind in the Black community that allows us to articulate our personal and collective needs without shame or stigma, thus taking ownership of our health and well-being. Mr. Chair, members, I thank you for the opportunity to share this information. I'm available for questions and feedback. Thank you.
You're welcome, Mr. McFarland. Thank you for being here. Next, we have Dr. Chris Bray. If you'd like to introduce yourself and who you're with and start your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and thank you, Representative Morin, for authoring this bill. My name is Chris Bray. I'm a child psychologist and researcher at Wilder Research previously. I was a director at AMBIT Network, a community university partnership at the University of Minnesota. Our mission is to increase access to quality care for traumatized children and adults. Minnesota data indicate that 35% of students in grades 7 through 12 reported at least one traumatic event, and African-American adults experienced a significantly higher number of traumatic events compared to white adults. By 2013, AMBIT Network had trained 300 white therapists, while 18% of kiddos being screened for trauma by therapists were African-American or multiracial. It's well documented that children and adults do much better in therapy when they receive services from someone of their own race, ethnicity, and our data showed that over 80% of traumatized children make significant improvement when their therapist uses a research-based trauma treatment. So we went to Bravada and her institute. Bravada is a well-respected member of the community, and she recruited 15 of her Black colleagues to enroll in our evidence-based trauma training. Her group was the first group of Black therapists to enroll and successfully complete this training, and that's thanks to her work. The impact of that, Bravada saw an opportunity to get more Black therapists well-trained. Those therapists then served more Black kiddos and adults and went on to train others, and many more Black people struggling with trauma received quality care from someone they trusted. And this is why House File 3372 is needed. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Dr. Bray. Next, we have Ms. Kiana Kennedy. if you would like to introduce yourself, who you're with, and start your presentation, please.
Hello. I just want to mention that I'm a fast speaker, so I'll do my best to read this slowly. So good morning. My name is Kiana Kennedy, and I'm honored to be here to speak on behalf of the bill to fund culturally specific agencies such as African American Child Wellness Institute. I come today to talk about the importance of culturally specific mental health for African American children and their parents like me. My experience of coming to counseling in a place that specialized in my culture was life-changing. I felt safe because the atmosphere and the staff validated who we were, and that created a comforting and welcoming environment. Sometimes I'd be in tears because my child would get into trouble at school and I did not know what to do. My concerns were about what happens to Black boys who don't get the skills to ask for help or to manage their emotions in schools or other public places. They're at risk for joining gangs, going to prison, or end up dead. They don't know how to cope. They don't know where to go. I feel like the problems he had would have escalated had I not seek help early on. My son learned the skills he needed to handle difficult situations. I feel like it taught him how to express himself and also gave him the skills to reach out for help as a normal thing to do. I don't think the average guy knows how to ask for help. As a parent, I also participated in free Project Marua parenting classes. After going through Project Marua, we gained a lot of skills and learned techniques about how to discipline and communicate with our children as African-American parents. We also learned how to use each other as resources, and having the input of other mothers and fathers built a sense of community, and that was great. Now my son, who had trouble being in the class, demonstrate that he is more than okay, and that means everything to me, because I know when it's time to put him into the world, he has the skills to cope, and that makes me feel happy that I could have provided him with that. In closing, I fully support funding culturally specific agencies like the African American Child Wellness Institute, because I can trust people like Dr. B and the staff to competently care about me, my child, and community. And for that, I am grateful. I think you're on mute.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Kennedy, for your testimony. I appreciate it. It was very heartfelt. I thank you for that. Next, I will open it up to questions. Does anyone have any questions for any of our testifiers or for the author of the bill? I'm not up. Oh, here we go. Representative Baker, if you'd like to go ahead, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks, Representative Brand, for this bill that is certainly needed. I think hearing the testifiers today, Dr. Bravada, Garrett, Akinsanya, I wanted to just say that, so now I did. It's a very cool name. Your testimony is very moving, because again, we don't want to have the efforts of going in and teaching folks, getting them ready, and then they aren't staying there because others are recruiting them away because of the work that you've done and we've done to invest in these things. My fear is this same thing, though. You know, I want to support a bill like this. There's a lot of looseness in the bill, that there's no reporting back to the legislature that I see. There is, and obviously it comes to an end, and we're kind of hand tying a bit of for future legislation to this 5-year plan, which isn't all bad. It just, there's an end to it, and then there might be a cliff if we don't figure out what to do then. I think there's some work that still yet needs to be done. That's why we call these committee hearings. That's why we continue to work on these things. And like some, you know, they want to come and just throw darts at these bills. I think this is a good bill that has a great foundation, that has things that we can work on. So I would like to continue to work with her on this and others. But again, Representative Moran, can you maybe just, and the one question I keep coming back to is, we talk about culturally specific training or awareness. And so as a member of the ORAC, which is the Opioid Response Council, we do a lot of discussions around the same thing. And it isn't because a person has a certain color that they get it. They could be culturally specific without having the same color, but I get that it makes a difference. How can we, in a country that has been very carefully talking about segregation or showing favoritism one way or the other, how do we get through this in a very transparent manner to help people of color in this field to get there without showing that kind of strong leaning? I don't mind asking the questions, because I want to understand this better. So if you can help me, Representative Moran or somebody else, thank you for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Baker. First, let me just say thank you for the questions and thank you for realizing that an institution like this is important to create strong children, strong family, and safe communities, right? And having those tools to do that. And I am so willing to talk more with you about how we can address your concerns around the report back and things like that to the legislature. And so from my perspective, of course, as an African-American mother myself, and a member of the community, and as we try to grapple in, let's just start with where we are in the Minnesota House of Representatives, about being able to talk about race, being able to validate the experiences that people share and talk about from the African-American community, but also to be open that we really do have answers to how we can improve outcomes, right? That may be different from how you see the world, because our two worlds, sometimes we live in two different worlds. That's just the foundation, right? And that is real for us. But we have, as you can see, we have experts, Black experts here, who are highly trained, highly qualified. And because of this history that we have in America around race, it is often important that Black children, Black mothers and fathers, if us from the Black community, feel a connection. It is that connection, that relationship, and that trust that bounds us to be able to heal in the way that creates success. And that doesn't always come from others who see the strengths in us instead of seeing the deficits, as I would call it. So I would just stop that, but you know, we're here, and I feel like had I not been here, you might have never known about the African American Wellness Institution. Right? Never know they exist. It would have just been the shortest that we thought, oh, they're not here. They are. They are here. And this is the beginning of recognizing that, validating that, and saying it's okay that we invest in an institution that is going to not just help the African-American community, but it's going to lift up our state and create a more vibrant, safe state. I don't know if Dr. Bravada has anything else to add to that, but
I actually do, and thank you so much for, again, asking that question, because to me, that gives me hope. Just your question tells me you want to understand and you want to help be part of the solution. And that, from a little girl who grew up in rural Texas town called Floyd Ada, where a man named Floyd and his wife named Ada developed a town of 4,000 people. That means a lot to me to hear the need for you to understand and desire. So like Representative Moran said, the society that we live in subconsciously tells Black children that they're not of value. We have research, and y'all have heard of the one in the 50s, when they had the Black doll and the white doll, and how the Black children wanted to play with the white doll. And that study was repeated about 4 years ago. And still, a little Black girl, 17 of the 21 children who participated, the little Black girl in the study, they asked her, which doll is like you? Or which doll is nice? She picked up the white doll. And she said, which doll it looks like you? And she picked up the Black doll. And she said, which of the dolls is like you? And she looked at the white doll saying in her head, I'm nice. And looked at the Black doll, and I'm Black. And she reluctantly pushed the Black doll forward. And those of us who are clinical psychologists understood that she was experiencing what we call cognitive dissonance. Because she knew she was nice, and she couldn't understand how you can be Black and nice at the same time. That is the ground, the background from which all of our child development it lives there. That is the part that race plays unconsciously every day. We in our country, we have angels' food cake is white, but devil's food cake is dark. Magic's all right unless it's black magic. And in our country, even a lie becomes okay when it's a white lie. These psychological interjects have to be intentionally dismantled in all of our systems, from our research to our testing to our practice. They're infiltrated with the problems of not understanding how those differences occur. So just by nature of having black skin, that doesn't make you culturally competent. And I want to make sure I'm clear in saying that. You have to know it's a lot of people of color who are getting trained in white institutions to do white practice on black folks. And one of the things that you heard Tamiko Ralston point out as a trainee is that when you are giving the full breadth of that training, you can be more effective as a clinician. You can make a difference in the lives of children and their family and their trajectory toward what I believe their divine rights be. That trajectory is moved forward toward goodness and health. So I know you may not have asked for a whole psychology lesson or copay, but the issue is that that's what we're dealing with and that's what we're fighting. So brother, you bring the hope when you talk about how can I make sure that agencies like this exist so that we can have more and more people and children and families like Sister Kiana saying that their children were saved from the streets. And so thank you for that question. And I'm open for any other questions. I won't be so long in it, but you've given me a chance to just lay the groundwork of what we do at our center.
Thank you, Dr. Bravada Garrett Akasanya. That was a great answer there. Appreciate it. Representative Baker, did you have any other questions?
Baker,
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, that's okay.
I'm seeing Baker, yeah.
So, and you know, thank you for that. I do have other questions, and I want to follow up with the author about this, and even maybe Dr. Bravada too, because you talked about a lot of things. I came into this not wanting to feel like I had enough information to really support the bill. There's a lot more information I still want, but I'm going to support it today out of the committee just because, though I still know this needs work and I want to continue to work on this project because it is important. And so thank you all. Because of time, Mr. Chair, I'll let it go for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Baker. Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Moran. Yeah, I guess I'll just start off just being completely honest. What I thought this bill was is not what it is after the testimony and the amendment. So I appreciate the amendment. And so then part of that throws out a whole lot of my questions. And now I have a whole nother set of questions. Because we know that, you know, this is an area that is delicate and also needs attention. So now that we've inserted a provider that is versus providers to establish. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I thought we were building something. I thought this was a whole new potential center that we were, you know, looking to build. And how are we going to fund that? And, you know, how are we going to operate that? But the amendment really clarifies everything a lot better. So I guess my question is then, by inserting the A before mental health, are we talking about one institution here that's going to do this work, or are we talking about this money is going to filter through to organizations and providers within my district and every district within the state? How will this money be distributed, or is it just going to be for the one institute with the folks that we've heard from so far? That's my first question.
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Representative Fisher, and thank you, Representative Frankie, for the question and eliminating a lot of the questions. As we looked at the language too, we realized that words like established was, you know, you send things to the revisor office and it comes back and you're like, this doesn't quite meet what we want here, because we want institutions to be established. We want them to be culturally competent. Every word that you see there is intentional language based on what I hear from the professionals of what is needed to get to have the impact and the outcomes that we want. And so we're looking for specifically what you see in that language to be supported and to be funded based on the impact and the outcome that we want.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Moran. Representative Franke.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Moran. I guess, yeah, no, this is what we all want, you know, culturally specific, comprehensive, trauma-informed, evidence-based, person, family-centered, mental health, you know what I mean? We need to get back to all of that. I guess, but part of my question wasn't answered. Is this just going to one organization or multiple organizations?
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Representative Fisher and Representative Franke. It is open to whoever meets those criteria.
Representative Franke.
That's what I wanted to hear, Mr. Chair. That's what I wanted to hear. We don't want to create barriers for other institutions to be able to provide these services or have these systems in place throughout the state. So if I have any other questions, I'll get back on, but that really helps clarify a lot. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Moran.
Thank you, Representative Franke. Next, we have Representative Backer.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. And I don't know if one of the testifiers would answer that or Chair Moran. In regards with, I see where you guys, where the outcome, what outcome you're looking to achieve. My question is, how do we measure this? What quantitative is going to be used to make sure that this program does what you want it to do? Instead of just saying that we want to accomplish this, what will we do? What will be done to make sure that we can determine this?
Representative Moran.
Representative, thank you, Chair Fisher. I'm sorry, I've been calling you Representative Chair Fisher and Representative Backer. So what you have before you is the African American Child Wellness Institution that has been around, I think, I'll let Dr. Bravada tell us exactly how long they've been around. And, you know, I think we also heard from Ms. Cray about the data and the research that they have at the Wilder Foundation has done. And so I think there's evidence there around the impact and the outcome. We heard it from the testifiers, but I will leave that to Dr. Bravada because, you know, she's before us because her institution is what I've been able to see, you know, not that I know every institution encompass what we're looking for in a nonprofit, in an institute to provide the services. So Dr. Bravada, can you talk a little bit more about, in response to Representative Baker's question?
Go ahead, Dr. Bravada.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Chair. I think I have two parts of that question that I'd like to address. First, the African American Child Wellness Institute began as a program as a part of my private practice, which was Bracken's Consulting and Psychological Services, where I have created training for Hennepin County, all over the state and all over the country around how to deal with African American community violence, trauma, historical as well as ongoing trauma, and how that affects the workplace and how it affects schools. So as I started seeing more and more things in our community, I formalized it to become an institute in 2008. And since that time, I have slowly been able to grow the people that I need in the institute. But as I said earlier during my testimony, we were some of the early CIMIC grantees. And I tell somebody it's like having a car and you need four wheels, but they give you already had one and they give you two more, but the car still can't run. And so it can't move because it needs four. It's always just been short of what was the appropriate amount, optimal amount to move forward. And so I want to just bring that up in terms of funding issues. I also want to say that one of the things that we do at the center is we do that training so that it can be replicated. We do the help in the community so that I can look at the different outcomes. And so one of the things that we know is that the research that we do in our center is culturally appropriate. So let me just give you a quick example. The way we measure it, because we've been a part of that CIMAC grant, is we have to measure outcomes pre-intervention, and post-intervention outcomes. We use measures, some which were adapted and created solely for African-American communities, and we have other measures that are more global. So we use the same measurements that other people use, and we have to have additional ones to make sure we're showing fidelity to the cultural components of the work we're doing. So I have no problem, and no one in our office has trouble keeping up with our data. We also look at the data just by counting. I could count that there are 40 people who have gone through that office who have gotten their license, and that's part of the data. And you can compare that to other organizations that have not had that success and had much, many, many more staff than we have had. So part of it is in what context do people leave with those competencies, and how do we measure those competencies? And I say nobody's any good until the parents and the children say it was good. When I have parents saying, you saved us. When I have parents saying, my kid was honestly, like the sister was saying, coming into the office crying because her child was kicked out of school every day, or all these calls from school, and they say the calls have stopped. We have outcome data because we're not just a practitioner, we are also scientists. We research what we're doing, and we continually work to modify and examine what we can do better. And so we are nowhere afraid of any outcome measures. We're not afraid of that. In fact, because we keep our statistics, the state, the DHS has repeatedly every year increased our funding because we overperform, we outperform our stated expectations. We have more people to come forward. It's not hard to get people to testify about the work that we do. And to me, that is the sign of success. And we always will have that. We're not afraid of that. That's the way we roll.
Thank you, Dr. Bravada.
You're welcome.
Just real quick, and I appreciate that, Chair Fisher.
Go ahead, Representative Packer.
Yeah, you can call me Baker. I'm okay with that. I won't comment on that, but on a serious note, I'm okay. But again, that's my main thing. If we're going to invest this type of money, we want a quantitative way of measuring outcome, and I do appreciate that information. Thank you.
Welcome. Next, we have Representative Beckerfin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I feel like this conversation around this bill has shaded towards some things that are really troubling to me, and I think it's important that we talk about that. I think that this, like, somehow it would be wrong if this money went to an organization or a group that's already set up to do this work. So what? Even if it was targeted towards a specific organization and center that's already prepared to do the work, that's great. If they had come forward and this bill, there were no ideas of any organizations where the money would go, then we would have picked at the bill and said, oh, well, there's nobody even set up to take this money anyway. So I don't find that problematic at all. And to what Chair Moran said, you know, if you meet the criteria in the bill, then the money can go to you. And I think that's important. As well as this, it almost sounds like, and I'm not saying that anyone is intending to do this, but there's sort of this insinuation in some of the ways some of the questions have come towards Chair Moran that somehow it would be unfair if these funds were targeted to the African American community and African American families and people. And that really gets us back to what we were trying to accomplish with the Select Committee on Racial Justice and the Select Committee report. You know, the idea when folks listened to that testimony or read the report was not that you would go, oh, wow, I didn't know that. That's really a bummer. And then just go back to the way you were always doing it. The idea is that now that we are openly talking about anti-racism and talking about systems that were built around one group of people having power and other people not having power, the idea is that we need to adjust accordingly. Now that we're talking about this and thinking about it through that lens, we need to adjust accordingly and be more intentional. Because if we don't be more intentional and we don't target things, then the status quo will continue to run the show. And what we know is that the status quo does not benefit these communities, because the status quo is built on literally centuries of systems only giving funds to organizations that are not like the folks who are testifying here today. And so I just want us to be really careful in sort of insinuating that there's somehow something unfair here when this is a very small amount of money going for something very important when we think about what that ask is in the context of history and where literally billions of dollars have gone for centuries. And so I really support this bill, Chair Moran. I think that targeting to what we need and calling out that trauma, calling out what needs to happen and putting that in the language is incredibly important. And so I'm very supportive of this bill, and I hope that we can all take a second and go back to that Select Committee report and think about what a bill like this means in the greater historical context, instead of just sort of picking at where a comma is or something like that. So thank you, Chair Moran. This is a good bill, and be proud to vote for it.
Thank you, Representative Becker Finn. Next, I'll move on to Representative Thompson.
Chair, everybody wants a clean bathroom until it's time to pay the janitor. Everybody wants their kids to have a hot lunch until it's time to find out wages for the nutrition service workers. Everybody wants their kids to learn until it's time to pay our teachers who are actually getting ready to go on strike. I say all that to say that when Black folks show up to these committees and say, this is what we need, believe us. It's not like we're taking anything away. You know, I have people tell me when I ask for funding targeted towards the African-American community that I'm racist, is what I've heard. When in all actuality, I see every community lobbying for things, and it seems like when we start talking about funding for it, oh, no, but yet and still we figure out ways to incarcerate our youth and complain about carjacking, gun violence in our Black communities. Some of the stuff we're asking for would eliminate some of the problems that we use on our political campaign trails to win campaigns. Like, crime has become a political talking point for politicians. And lo and behold, the Black community is suffering the most crime mostly. Like, and so I know that we need mental health providers in our community. I know that we need funding just like everybody else. And I know that we pay taxes just like everybody else. Right. And we have no problem letting the government go in our pocket and take tax dollars out of our pocket. And then we show up and say, this is what we need in our community. And people seem to just give us what they think we should have. And so I'm just saying that to say exactly what Chair Becker Finn just said. It's not hurting anybody to make sure that everybody, every community has the resources they need. We just need a little bit more than everybody else right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. Representative Frankie, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm just going to start off by, I know some of the questions around this and some of my concerns were, it's not about where or how the money's going. I want to make sure it's going to the right places. I want to make sure that everyone is served within the entire state of Minnesota. I don't want to create geographical barriers to somebody who is African-American in Representative Backer's community. I don't want to create barriers to the availability of somebody in Representative Thompson's community to get to these services. So my concerns or questions about how the about how the bill was written was more about how are we going to be able to provide these services with these limited funds to everybody throughout the state. So along that line, I do have a question about the last paragraph here where it says, and this would be for Chair Moran, regardless of ability to pay or place of residence, can you explain that to me? I mean, I guess I understand the ability to pay. We want to make sure people are being provided services, but I also want to make sure that these organizations can continue to provide these services. As Representative Baker was saying earlier about cliffs and having abilities, I want to make sure that we're funding organizations that are going to be able to continue to provide these services. So how, if they're, regardless of ability to pay, how are these organizations going to continue to provide these services? And then place of residence, I guess that's very vague for me. So I would like maybe Chair Moran to think about going forward, place of residence in Minnesota, because we are concerned about the state of Minnesota and the residents in the state of Minnesota.
Representative Moran.
Chair Fisher and Representative Frankie. I just want us to remind us that we're talking about mental health, mental wellness, and the impact that the trauma over the last 2 years in the pandemic, and even before the pandemic, has had on the Black community, Black outcomes, the educational system, the workforce. I mean, it's huge. Safety, we're talking about safety, right? And so it is important that we're able to serve children and families, Black children, Black families, right? And so with that, I will stop there because I know Dr. Bravada is going to help you out with the last part of your questions that you don't understand. So.
Dr. Bravada.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, it is for Minnesota. And as I said during my talk, we've had clients to literally, I'm telling you, from Rochester, bring busloads of families into the clinic. We have people who drive in from St. Cloud, or if we're there in that area, we see people wherever they are. And because of telehealth, finally, our reach is even going further. The problem is the harvest is plenty, but the laborers are few. We need more staff. We need more people to do the work. And primarily what we are hoping is that the outcome of these kind of deliberations will yield more people in the field who can do the work, who can come and get trained so that they can know how to do the work in a correct way. They can know how to use evaluations appropriately that fit our culture. And so, yeah, it's for anyone who needs to get the help. And we're not just able to serve people who are African-American. We serve African immigrant populations. We serve biracial children and families. And we have trained, I can say over the years, at least 20 or 25 allies, white allies, who have also gone into the field, not through the CIMIC grant, but because we have relationships with the U, St. Mary's, St. Thomas. They send their graduate students to get trained in our office. So I know it's not enough of us physically to handle the work in front of us. So that's another reason why learning to do this culturally specific work is so critical. And although they know that there's only so far you can go, because when people come and they've had discrimination at work, they are going to, because of racial discrimination, they're going to have a hard time talking to a white therapist about that, because they're already going to be saying, I can't trust white people. And then what does it look like? And that's all I'd have to give them is white people. So it's important for us to learn how people grow, how they change, how they go through the developmental stages of their cultural awareness. It's a lot of science behind what we do. And it's just not being shared in the mainstream. And that's why we want to be able to teach and reach people from all over. And as I said earlier, I'm a country girl. I'm from the country. And so I understand rural communities probably better than most, because that's where I grew up. And so I understand that there are very few resources out there. So our ability to connect with them, our ability to have relationships with them is really critical. We may not have a big presence, but after you see one person and their family, what happens is the next session, you'll get with them on the phone, and they've got their cousin over here. They don't care about confidentiality. They got their cousin, their pastor, the baseball coach. They've got whoever it is that they feel like needs to get help, and say, Dr. B, can they have some of my session? And I'm just kidding. It doesn't work like that, but that's what they do. And that's what happens in rural community, because in rural community, we find that neighbor is not by proximity. It's by a spirit in your heart, because your nearest neighbor may be 2 miles down the road. So part of what we're saying is how to reach people differently and in different environments. But for African Americans, that space is so lonely. It's so isolating. It's so debilitating. It's so oppressive that we have to create ways so that we can all heal together. And I hope that answered your question.
Chair Fisher?
Yes.
And Dr. Pavala, just respond to the ability to pay, that you serve people regardless of their ability to pay or not.
Yeah, The CFO often gets on our cases because people come and they can't pay, but we realize I actually feel like that's my and I'm not going to preach, but I feel like it's my divine calling to do this work. And I don't want money to stop somebody from healing. That means more to me, that they be healed, that their children be healed, that child won't be one I have to bury. So that's why people come regardless of their ability to pay. And if they don't have insurance, we help them get it.
Thank you, Dr. Bravada.
You're welcome. Sorry about that.
Representative Frankie, and I'm going to before I get back to Representative Frankie, I want to let folks know is that we did have another bill on here today. We'll continue. What I'd like to do is the bill that we have in front of us from Representative Moran is we have a few more minutes. So let's go ahead and continue with the questions here. But I would like to get Representative Moran's bill voted on before we end here. And we've got about 9 minutes left. So the other bill we have will end up taking up next week and not getting to today. So as a reference to the other folks who are here for the other bill, Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Moran. And thank you, Dr. Bravada. I won't even try and attempt the rest of it. Thank you for your passion. I admire it. And I think a lot of the questions, at least that I've had, I just want to make sure that we're doing the right thing to get the money to the people that we want to help, regardless of who they are. You know, I think all of us on this committee understand that there are disparities in this world, and we need to address those. And if we make the investments properly, kind of going back to what Representative Thompson was saying, you know what I mean? Then we can help stop crime. We can help save money. We can help save lives. And there is that right now. So I think, you know, we're gonna support this, at least I am, going forward. But I just want to make sure that we're making the changes, that the bill language does what we need it to do, and we're not leaving anybody behind. And we're providing the ability of your organization or others to continue the work. And that's my concern. You know, we want this work to continue. We want it to move forward, and we don't want it to be able to just drop off the cliff and here we are stuck again, and people are not being held properly. So that's all that I have, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much. Thank you, Moran, and thank you again, Dr. Bravada.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Representative Frankie. Representative Moran, we're starting to draw toward the end here. I want to say thank you to you and your testifiers for all the great testimony and helping with some very challenging questions out there and helping educate us so that we can support better work like this to continue. So Representative Moran, I will turn it over to you for any closing comments that you have.
And I will be short. I just want to thank you, Chair Fisher, for bringing this bill forward. I want to thank all of those who asked the questions, who made the statements about why a bill like this is so needed. This bill addresses the mental health workforce crisis that we're in. The bill addresses trauma. And the definition that I use for trauma is that trauma is not the thing that happens, right? We look at say, oh, this event happened. Oh, they're traumatized. No, trauma is not the thing that happened, but it is the effect that is left within us by our experiences. The Institute that you have before us and the work of the Institute is not going away. It's not going away. The work and the need is too great. And so I just ask for your support of House File 3372. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, thank you, Representative Moran. There being no further discussion, I renew the motion that House File 3372, as amended, be recommended for referral to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. Mr. Kroos will take the roll.
Fisher.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Frederick.
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Frankie.
Frankie, aye.
Frankie, aye. Backer.
Backer votes aye.
Backer, aye. Baker.
Baker votes aye.
Baker, aye. Becker Finn.
Aye.
Becker Finn, aye. Hansen.
Hansen, aye.
Hansen, aye. Katiza Watoon.
Aye.
Katiza Watoon, aye. Lippert.
Lippert votes aye.
Lippert, aye. Moeller.
Aye.
Moeller, aye. Pearson.
Aye.
Pearson, aye. Thompson.
Thompson votes aye.
Thompson, aye. Mr. Chair, there are 12 ayes and 0 nays.
Thank you, Mr. Kroll. There being 12 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails. House File 3372, as amended, is recommended for referral to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. Once again, thank you, Representative Moran, and your testifiers for being here today and presenting the bill to us. Members, we are not going to be taking up House File, my bill of 3215. We will be holding that over for next week. So at next week's meeting, which will be on March 2nd, we will be taking up the Bang bill, which we discussed earlier, and then we'll be taking up my House File 3215. There will also be other bills that will be added on between then. So I want to thank the committee for the robust discussion today, and we'll look forward to seeing everybody next week. Thank you all for your time.